For October the 3rd, 2014, we talk about the new Steam experience, Neverending Nightmares, and we ask you which game's looks blew you away. Welcome to the 77th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, guys, we're back after missing a week.
Yeah. I missed you guys.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
I'm really sorry about that. I got incredibly sick.
That's a pretty good excuse.
So yeah. Are we talking like the zombie plague?
No. So every year at around this time, around the time the weather gets changed, or around the time I'm exposed to a lot of people, I get... I get ear infections every year, like clockwork.
Oof.
You know, really bad. It hurts to swallow. It hurts to breathe sometimes. Moving your neck hurts. Your sinuses and everything are stuffed up. I went to, here's a pro tip to anybody in America with very high deductible health insurance. Look for a retail health clinic. They will charge you very, very little money and give you all the drugs you need.
So, nice. Really?
Yeah. So, like, go to a Walgreens, and they probably have, like, a little nurse practitioner practice when you know, like, oh, I just need some amoxicillin and a painkiller. Please give this to me. You just go. But I went there, and she, you know, she pulled out the little ear looker in her and said, wow, your head is just bulging with mucus. Which she sounded genuinely impressed. So I kind of felt like I went to the fair and like pounded the mallet onto like that little like lever that raised the mucus into my ears. So
did you get free medicine then?
I mean, it wasn't free, but antibiotics are cheap. They hand those out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That should be a thing.
I know, right?
If you are so sick, you should get like a prize, and you should get free medicine.
I think they call that socialized health care.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's how Canada works, but you have to be the most sick.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm sorry, your boils were not quite as bad as the winners.
Yeah,
they were not that impressive.
Like Jimmy up the street, he's like 95% tumor. Okay.
Poor Jimmy.
I know, right? Yeah. So I got well just in time to edit a shitload of things over the weekend. So we're all good. Oh, how are you guys?
Good. I went to a drive-in movie theater over the weekend.
Ooh, those are fun.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I think it's like
that's
the actually,
only one. That's really considerate of you guys since you guys have a child.
Yeah. We took him and you can kind of seal him in the car. he was actually really good the entire time. So that actually wasn't an issue, but it was really quaint. It was the perfect night for it. So we kind of sat out in front of the car. We snuck in a shit ton of wine, and got blasted. So that was fun. Obviously it's a double feature. So you drink the entire first movie and you have the entire second movie to cool down.
Yeah.
So it was a good time. Saw Box Trolls and When the Game Stands Tall.
I have heard of neither of those movies.
I've heard of the first one.
Those sound like fake movie titles.
I could have hallucinated it, not sure.
Yeah, well, you were pretty drunk.
Am I the only one? Like, I'm now afraid to do stuff like that because I'm getting the thing where, like, I'll drink, you know, get drunk, sober up, and get drunk again. Then just like
spontaneous drunk bustion or what?
I don't know. I mean, I think what it is just like it apparently takes a while to actually get into my system.
That's the case. It depends on your gut enzymes and such. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm
just curious as to why you're drinking for such protracted amounts of time and why you stop.
He's interval training.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
Fartlick some Jaeger?
I guess.
No.
Wait, did you say fartlick some Jaeger?
It's actually a real thing. I forget what. It's a training method.
Ugh. Yeah, fartlick's a, it's like Swedish for distance play. It's basically the technical name for interval training.
Oh. I could have sworn it was Swedish for a third grader named this.
I thought it was just a very unfortunate last name, but I like the Swedish version better.
Richard Fartlick.
Yeah, it's like, how did the first Fartlick become a Fartlick, you know?
To be fair, in Swedish, that could mean something totally different.
Yeah, it could mean lamp.
You go to IKEA, buy a nice Fartlick to to light
a designer
up the
Fartlick.
Room.
Yeah. Dennis, we missed it last week, but we were at Oktoberfest too.
Yeah,
we happened
fun.
Upon each other just entirely by random.
The fates ordained it.
Yeah. And I was about as drunk as could be at that point. So
yeah, you were very evangelical about that pretzel.
Oh yeah, that pretzel will change your life.
It was not undersold.
Yeah, no, they're like it's a company called Heidi's based out of like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia or something. They come in from a ways, but they're always set up at the exact same spot. And it's been my first stop at Oktoberfest for a good long while. So, David, how about you? How was your week?
It's crazy, crazy busy. Yeah. I've learned that grading papers really, really sucks. It's amazing the ways people come up with to get things wrong.
Well, you could just be one of those like Dead Poet Society teachers and, you know, have everybody stand on their desk and like test the structural integrity of their desk and then be on their way. Like you realize that you're probably, well, I guess you're not assigning them the work. So
are you
assigning them the work? Because if you are, then you're a sucker.
No, I'm not assigning them the work, but it's one of those things where it's a combination of like I know, it's one of those weird things where it's like people need to either get it wrong or get it right. None of this bullshit in between stuff.
Yeah, none of this half credit shit. Yeah. No.
Like, you're in engineering, so the criteria with which you grade should be like, if this person was building a bridge that I was going to cross over and this factored into the equation somehow, would I be happy with it?
I know. My assumption on engineering is that all engineers just make stuff up.
Chilling.
Chilling.
No, yeah, it's just I don't know, like I'm doing an assignment right now and it's you know, they're supposed to be doing some of the problems in MATLAB, plotting the problems in MATLAB, which is like a math software. And there's people who will like just draw the plots, and it's like it's obvious that they put in the work to get the right answer because they have the right thing, but it's like the instructions kind of said do this in MATLAB.
Yeah. Maybe they're looking for extra credit, like, look, I did it the hard way.
Yeah
something I want to do. I want to go back, like, you know, and I say this to every middle schooler and high schooler I see, which is, hey, don't get angry at your teacher when she assigns you homework. Like, Ms. Jenkins, everything she assigns you, she has to grade. So if she had her way, there would be nothing.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, I'm in a situation where everything some other guy assigns, I have to grade.
Yeah, yeah. That's why you got to sleep with him.
Wow.
No. It's like, will you grade this? I don't mean like sex. I just mean you keep him warm at night. You know.
You know, cuddler.
Yeah.
Ben, how was your week? Save me.
So I started sleeping with students. Okay. And my week was lovely.
Students of life. Good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. I don't know how to rebound from this. That's a typical week.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to rebound from a typical week?
I don't know how to rebound from the derailment that we previously had.
Okay, I was going to say, how awesome is your life that a typical week you're like, oh man, I need to rebound.
He does live in Vegas.
I just picture him like podcasting with like shades on, you know, the curtains draw. Like, do you guys have to talk so loud?
I'm actually in the backseat of a limo driving down the strip on a loop. That's how I live my life.
Yeah, because if you stop, the mob gets you.
And that's
right.
That's like some NFL sideline quality microphones you got going on there to have that voice canceled out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. My life is surprisingly the opposite of what people assume it is, as far as one who lives in Las Vegas. But yeah.
It's okay. We all know you're hiding a masked alter ego, so you got to keep this life low key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger in True Lies.
By Tuesdays from 9 to 11, he's Ben Merkel. Every other time of the week, he's Mr. Big. Oh, well, cool. It's been a week since we all gathered, so I wanted to get a little bit of a status update. This is going to be a pretty normal episode, and dare I say, probably kind of short. Because we are all very tired.
Every time we make that promise, we break it. So let's say we have a vision for a shorter episode, but we're not going to, you know, commit to anything.
Yeah. There was a show on 5x5 a while ago called Hypercritical. It was very good. But there was a, they arrived at, and the fans of the show arrived at a mathematical factor for how much longer saying this is going to be a shorter episode actually made the show. It was somewhere between like 1.3 and 1.5. It was crazy.
Nice.
Yeah. But,
maybe we say we'll just camp out here for a while and, you know, we'll probably go on for a longer episode. Yeah. Reverse psychology this.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should see what happens if we try and do a marathon episode.
Just 24 hours of live off the cuff. I don't think iTunes will accept that.
Isn't that basically like what Twitter is, just, you mean, you know,
Twitch
discretized?
I think maybe, I don't know, aren't we all just live streaming our lives at this point in this techno society we've cyber inherited?
You guys, today I watched someone watching Twitch on Twitch. I think I have a problem.
Oh, Jesus. Was he doing commentary?
No, it was a guy playing Hearthstone, and, you know, he was in his game, and then he must have gotten some notification on his phone that someone he liked was streaming, and so he was like, hold on a second, guys, backed out of his game, and went to watch them on Twitch.
It was like the pre-taped Colin. It was like the end of the pre-taped Colin show sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got some news, we've got a multiplayer, and we've got what we've been playing section, so why don't we jump right to it? So, guys, what has happened in the week here? And we can extend back to the week before because there might have been some big stuff. Ben, I'm going to volunteer you.
All right. I have one that's maybe related to video games, but it's related to something I'm interested in, something Dennis is interested in. So,
yeah. Go on.
Yes.
They made a Big Lebowski pinball table.
Nice. And
the reason why I'm interested in it is because there's probably a significant chance that it could come to the Pinball Hall of Fame, which is right by where I live.
So let's pencil in a date that I can come see you next.
And so, well, yeah, let me make sure that it shows up. And yeah, but
I think cool. I saw this. It has like a bowling alley built into it, right?
Yeah,
it's like a sub table.
So part of it is the exterior bowling alley that they go to. There's also other bowling alley references. They also have a lot of stuff from the dream sequence in the movie.
Yeah, there's the checkered floor.
And there's a White Russian, too.
Yeah, it's so. Like, is it just glued to the glass on top of it? That's what it looks like?
Maybe.
Like, I could see if there was a coaster for your White Russian. But that's just a tease to put a White Russian in front of you.
I'd also be curious to what they use to make that a White Russian. Hopefully, yeah, whatever.
It's probably some kind of resin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that, you know, tangential. But
yeah. No, that's pinball's inbounds.
All right.
It's kind of having a renaissance right now, or a resurgence, or both.
Or an insurgence.
A renaissance. Are there any other combinations? Can we go on? Okay, nope. Cool. All right. We're good. Yeah, I kind of want to do the bowling alley. That looks fun.
And just as a side note, also, since I mentioned Pinball Hall of Fame, they have this real cool machine that they just got in where it's a quote-unquote full-length bowling alley. It's about maybe like 10 to 15 feet, but what it is you have like skee balls and you throw it down the lane, and there's these metal sensors that feel if it rolls over it or not.
Yeah.
And then there are pins that hang down above the track. And so based on where the what sensors are hit, it'll lift the pins up as if it's being knocked over. Huh. So it's a mechanical bowling alley. It's so really cool.
That's kind of cool, but what does that have to do with pinball?
There's a lot of stuff there that kind of exceeds pinball and just goes into fun. Like
electromotive entertainment.
They have Tetris and Super Mario Brothers. They also have a machine that you put a quarter in it, and it just shakes your feet violently for about 30 seconds. But it's surprisingly fun.
So. What was the highlight game that we played?
Oh, yeah.
Your guy doesn't move. So think like foosball, only the rotation is around a vertical axis, and you can't move the player back and forth. So you kind of have to make a choice that you can block either the right side of your goal or the left side of your goal. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to react quickly to do that. And then shooting is just a matter of how fast you can whip around this guy to fire it. And your angle and your speed and everything are controlled by that. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Huh.
It's amazing how deep, very simple mechanics can be made when you're playing against another human.
Well, yeah, because the game becomes the other person.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is this just like pinballs are in effect? Like pinballs are to video games what practical special effects are to movies?
I mean,
that's a really good analogy. I like that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking at this here, you know, I just think interactive erotic software, the wave of the future, dude. 100% electronic.
Well, that's I don't a know, turn.
But I still jerk off manually.
Yeah. You have to be quoting something.
Yeah.
Big Lebowski. Big Lebowski.
For some reason, so I just Googled because I thought he referenced teledildonics in that. And so I just Googled the Big Lebowski teledildonics, but I don't think that's part of the quote. Oh, well.
But I'm really
wait,
turned
did you
on
actually include? Did you actually include in the Google, but I don't think that's part of the quote?
No. No, but it just brought back a bunch of stuff that wasn't quite there. The wave of the future. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention because I was Googling that. That constructive. I apologize to us and the listeners.
No regrets, man.
Yeah.
I've got a story that's related to something that's in the Pinball Hall of Fame as well.
Okay.
Which is Tetris, as Ben mentioned.
I've actually got that story as well.
Yeah, why don't you guys tag team?
Yeah, let's every other word we'll just say together. So there
is
going
to
be
a
Tetris
Pimpmobile.
So close.
There you go.
Fun fact for the Babies Ate My or Kobolds Ate My Baby game. I've rolled a character. I've never actually played it, but one of my character's skills was to know human words, and I got to pick six human words, and the final one was indeed Pimpmobile.
Huh.
Yep.
Well, let's see. It's Bender's second most used word. No, it's Daffodil. Daffodil is his second. Pinmobile is number six.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
somebody take the lead on talking about this
ahead,
inscrutable thing.
All right, so there's going to be a Tetris movie, and I thought I kind of, from several articles, sort of extracted what I thought were some choice quotes from the press release. Can I read that?
Yeah.
Is this real or is this... Okay, go.
This is the thing.
Okay.
It's a very big, epic sci-fi movie. This isn't a movie with a bunch of lines running around the page. We're not giving feet to the geometric shapes. And this is like This next one's kind of makes my soul die a little. Brands are the new stars of Hollywood.
God damn it.
They have a story behind Tetris, which makes it a much more imaginative thing. Also, we certainly have canvas for location-based entertainment based on the epicness.
David, you might as well just be wailing on my kidney with a ball-peen hammer right now.
You might as well be making him eat underbaked kale.
That's from the pre-roll. I guess that's why kidney was the first thing I went to.
Yes. My question is this. Is Liam Neeson going to be in it?
We can only hope.
All right. He was in Battleship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I look at this and I think about like, oh, you know, there's a Minecraft movie in the works or whatever. But then I go back to like to a place in my mind where I had just first heard about the Lego movie and thought this is going to be the most asinine horse shit I've ever seen. And it turned out to be one of the better movies I've seen this year.
I
have no hope that something that describes itself out the gate as being a sci-fi epic based on Tetris could be as good as a Lego movie, but just go there in your mind for a second.
What they also say is what you see in Tetris is the teeny tip of an iceberg that has intergalactic significance.
Like, where do the blocks go?
I'm going to roll by one of the articles, not so much for the actual article, but so much as they link several fairly epic fan videos for Tetris movies.
Nice.
Okay.
There's one from a while ago where they had giant Tetris blocks that came out of the clouds, yeah. And I think they like destroyed buildings if they like lined up with them or whatever.
Got that one. They also have like Tetris Gladiators movie.
Well, there was the Mega 64 skit. I think it was one of their first ones where the guy in the LC, he was wearing an L-shaped Tetris costume. And he just wandered in, like he was wandering around trying to fit into stuff. So it was like him resting against like mailboxes and shit. Yeah.
Because no one likes the L-brick.
The L-brick is useful. It's a workhorse. It's that Z-brick you got to look out for.
Yeah, death to the Z-bricks.
Yeah. Z and S, that's what's going to get you. I think that's mathematically proven. I don't know.
I'm sure some mathematician has dedicated his life to Tetris.
Have you guys seen the Marble Madness, the movie?
No.
Yes.
I think we listened to this either on this podcast or the previous podcast.
Yes. Yeah, definitely look it up. It's a flash tub video from Something Awful. It's something special though. Throughout that conversation, I thought up some kind of crazy let's make it an app, because everything has to be an app now these days with their kids and their Snapchats and whatnot, and their Grinders. Oh, it seems like every kid is up on Grinder. So it's online Tetris, except it's not competitive. Every time you clear a line, those bricks go to somebody else. And
isn't that already a thing?
Tetris?
No, I mean, like, indirectly. It just goes off to somebody random.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, that's how, like, Puzzle Pirates did sword fighting.
Yeah, okay. I guess I'm thinking, like, eventually, as it dwindles off, like, it could just be a slow day at the block factory. And so as more people play it, there are more blocks flying around. But the fewer people there are playing, the less overall movement there is. So once it falls below a critical mass, everybody leaves. Guys, I'm not describing a very good business. I think I'm describing a very like moderately interesting concept for it.
You should sell it. You know, Microsoft will snap it up.
Yeah, no, I have to like, it has to
three
be success-
years later.
Yeah, it has to be successful for 5 years before Microsoft will
Wait,
pick it up.
What about that Mola Nuke dude? Doesn't he like games that make no sense and involve blocks?
David, I don't mean to like... I don't mean to heap on. That is possibly the most creative pronunciation of Peter Molyneux's name I've ever heard.
Mola Nuke.
Wow. So, So is there anything else about this? Did Dennis, are there any details that didn't come up? Because this was my story too, but I think we've covered everything.
No, I think we've beat it to death pretty well. There's a lot of good like fake trailers out there for it, so that's fun. Yeah. I hope I never hear about this again.
Yeah. Well, this what is it? The production company behind this, Threshold Entertainment, did the Mortal Kombat movie and Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
So the bar is high.
Yeah. Now, how are they still in business?
Well, the first Mortal Kombat was actually okay, from what I recall. Mm-hmm. However, that effectively makes it. It's been 25 years since they put out anything.
So. What was The Legend of Chun-Li or whatever? Did they do that one as well?
Oh, the Street Fighter one?
Street Fighter. Okay, never mind. I'm thinking the wrong one. Yeah. That movie was something special.
Yeah. The YouTube Mortal Kombat webisodes are awesome, though.
Yeah. I'm looking at this right now. These are the guys who ultimately ended up distributing Food Fight.
What is that?
Look up Food Fight. It is something of an infamous internet thing. It is a very bad CGI movie whose cast includes, let's say, Charlie Sheen, Wayne Brady, Hilary Duff. Looking down here, it's got Christopher Lloyd, Ed Asner, Chris Kattan. I can keep going, you guys. Cloris Leachman. Let's see here. Yeah,
just made that one up. That's not a real person.
But the idea. Well, Cloris Leachman's like a lady actress, a respected lady actress. But the idea is like that. Like this takes place in a supermarket, and all of the characters are representative of different brands. Except there's a new brand that comes in that's basically the Nazis.
So P&G.
Whoa. Do you want me to bleep that?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, cool.
I've said it to their face. It's not a big deal.
I absolutely love P&G, and I think it's an amazing company, so that was totally sarcastic.
Okay, cool. It is the outside perception.
They're big, so people love to hate.
And I think that's what it is. So this movie was in production for several years. This is turning into an episode of like How Did This Get Made or something like that. It was
with absolutely no research.
Yeah, well, no, because I've read about it, but I'm relaying it, you know, just kind of like months after the fact. There was somebody at work who rented it and tried showing it to their kids, and was like, it is straight up like making light of Nazism. It's crazy. But it was in production for years and years, and all the brands backed out, so they had to replace all of the characters with generic ones. So basically, all you have is just like a short list of the brands that wanted to be associated with this. And it ran out of money so many times it got passed from studio to studio in these fire sales. And the only way that it got like the final push of financing to get out the door was it was insured through like fireman's insurance or something like that. Like just the production of it, they had it insured through this company that basically pays for healthcare and life insurance whenever a hero dies. So it was basically funded by defrauding heroes.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't mean to take us down that journey, but
so where was this, what was this movie originally supposed to be?
It was supposed to be even like, you know, like it stayed very true to its idea, which it goes back to what you said about brands.
Like, I guess.
In the modern day, brands are the new Hollywood stars. Fuck you. sorry, not you, the person who said that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would feel weird having just two briefs here. But Ben, did you have anything else to say about that? I didn't want to move on with that. All right. I'll just throw this in here. Have you guys used the new Steam?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
I've opened it up. I haven't actually like clicked around in it.
Yeah. I don't know what I think about it. So the idea is that Steam just put out this new UI overhaul that changed the storefront from something that was kind of like fixed as a, you know, here is a front page with everything that's selling well and kind of our big crawl of like the games that we want to feature. And in a push to make stuff more discoverable, they have turned it into more of an Amazon, where the experience is entirely catered to what basically what it thinks you're interested in. Okay?
Poorly.
See, I don't know how poorly it is, because after a couple days of using it, and I gave it a fair shot, I went through and you've got like this discovery queue where it says like, hey, would you be interested in this? Yes or no? I went through like basically to train it, and now all of a sudden it's showing me like indie horror games and stuff. It's like, okay, cool. This is like arriving at a place where I can kind of accept that, understanding the grossness of having a computer look at me to try and recommend things to make money for people.
I mean, see, why I was just thinking about this because this was on my mind earlier this week, and I think it's kind of to Steam as well. I don't understand why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, because I have to agree, but to be fair, I'm literally getting my PhD in that.
Yeah, but the point being, like, I understand if they're hiding stuff from you, like you search for a game you want and literally can't find it because it doesn't think you're in the right demographic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I'm online, I don't want to see ads for tampons served up to me. Like, that's not relevant. I'd love them to at least try to do something relevant.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, I don't see that being evil at all.
Yeah, I think where it gets a little bit crazy is obviously where it's hiding, we're hiding it from you. I don't know that I'm that I'm opposed to any kind of like, you know, targeting, but it comes down to, you know, like it within a category, like what happens like with these, you know, curation kind of things. What happens if there's somebody influential who can just be paid off to put something in their list, and all of a sudden it's showing up on everybody, you know. Like to juice the numbers. Like basically the perception is something isn't rising to the top because of its merits. If it's a system that can be exploited, then somebody's going to exploit it, and all of a sudden I'm seeing a bunch of like, you know, Duke Nukem Forever, which for some reason won't come off the top of my list.
So that, now I think you're talking about a different feature entirely, because and this is the weird phenomenon of Twitter. I see everyone tweeting about it, but I never actually saw directly what the thing was. But apparently, like, influential people can add games to their lists, or like your friends can, or whoever, and that will influence what you see.
Yeah, you can. So that is a separate feature, but it also informs like what pops in. So if we did, and I consider making one of these, I might. If this is something you want to see from us, like a Steam curation list of all the games that we've talked about on the level, it would be a lot of work to do, but I could do it. Right. Like we could do that. But if somebody followed that, my understanding is that actually plays into the algorithm of what you see. Or if you're looking at that, you know, they can disproportionately affect what, you know, whatever people are looking at.
So what are we complaining about? If you choose to follow IGN, you'll see games that IGN recommends.
Yes. Except that system can be manipulated.
You're opting in to follow these people, right?
Right. Right. But I mean, just the idea is, yeah. You
see, I feel like the issue, though, is...
I feel a little bit like we're talking past each other.
Would it be in their best interest to allow it to be manipulated?
Probably not. And Steam has come out and said, like, oh, we didn't really consider that. Or, you know, we have no idea, what the effect here is going to be. So, like, yeah. I'm kind of coming around on the recommendation feature. Like, the idea of them presenting this queue, it's exposed me to some new stuff that I probably wouldn't have seen before. Like, interesting little, like, free-to-play first-person exploration things. Like, I don't necessarily know, like, if it's a problem that it's, you know, that it's learning from you. I just wonder if it's an inelegant or possibly inaccurate thing, especially if they're looking at your library and you just have a bunch of, like, Humble Bundle stuff. And one of my bigger concerns is it was nice knowing that like around 1 o'clock every day I could go on to Steam and look at their storefront and see what was like new that day, right? Like
they don't have a newest thing, right?
So or like, you know, like the new featured. So oftentimes they would, you know, like if a game went on sale for like 20% or whatever, it would just be put in the carousel at the top, you know, or it would be, you know, kind of like featured over there. Right now, that carousel is the stuff that is kind of catered to you, some of which is on sale, others of which are not, right? So, and you know, like, I don't entirely trust the algorithm to put everything that I like in front of me. There might be something I might be missing. There's a little bit of, like, fear of missing out behind this. You can get to, like, a, like, hey, what's popular, you know, kind of thing. Like, oh, here's the top-selling list. But I don't know. I guess I miss the Steam curated storefront because that exposed me to like some, you know, some new stuff that might, like, that might have really been worth knowing about.
Yeah. Although, for granted, you're complaining that, you know, certain people can influence it, and you're asking for one person to influence it, the Steam. Well, I guess it's not one person, but, you know, you don't want several people influencing what you see. You just want Steam influencing what you see.
Kind of, right? I mean, you know, like the App Store isn't a really great comparison for this because, you know, it's a terrible experience for finding new stuff. However, you have the top selling thing, and then you also have like, here's a list of the stuff that of the stuff that we're featuring, oftentimes informed by like editor's picks and just kind of like, hey, here's what's on sale. Here's, you know, like here's what's new and noteworthy for you. Right. And like that's a little bit the thing that we're missing out on. I don't know. I guess I don't trust the algorithm to know me enough yet. However, I've seen it growing to know me. And like the other side of this is, like, it's a little bit hard to feel grossed out about it because the majority of the developers on Steam are indies, right? And there was an article, I think it was on Polygon, that basically said, hey, this is working. We've seen like page views and, you know, and revenue jump because people are like being guided to the correct, you know, to like to the correct thing.
Yeah, I think you have to like, it's one of those kind of, you know, make the good bad split on the whole Big Brother information thing. Like I absolutely hate whenever, you know, someone takes my information to intrude on me, right? So if you're gonna sell my information so I start getting spam emails, that's horrible. And I never want that. However, if it's something that I'm going to see anyway, like an ad during TV or an iMedia banner or something like that, yeah, I want it to have my, you know, give me its best guess as to what it thinks it's interesting to me.
Yeah.
So
literally sat through an hour and a half class on this today, and now I'm hearing it all over again.
And you know, continuing the literally 75% of my clients at work do this exact same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't have faith in I don't have faith in the technology or the motive. Like it's,
yeah, I think the technology, like, it's definitely not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. On the other hand, I suppose it kind of depends on what you're going to do. What I would kind of wonder, you know, something we're actually starting today, you know, one of the problems with some of these technologies is the things where, you know, one of the examples is, you can create a system that can accurately predict, you know, if someone likes to drink tea, they probably also like to drink coffee. Mm-hmm. The problem is the only reason that system works is because like 90% of the population, you know, drinks coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So literally any prediction that involves predicting you drink coffee is a good prediction. So yeah. I feel like you could have some problem with that. Like, you know, like you mentioned, like indie survival horror games, that's like 90% of what's released on Steam every week.
Not particularly.
So I feel like there could be some situations where like you could easily fall down into a niche where they're just showing you like all kind of the indie churn.
I thought of a great example for how Steam should not do it. And that example is Netflix. So I'm actually very annoyed whenever I go into Netflix because it gives me kind of the shows we think you'll like based on what you've watched. Okay, cool. And then it gives you categories we think you'll like based on what you've watched. Okay. And then there is no way to get to a category that it doesn't already think that you would want to see. So like there's no way, unless it thinks that I want to see an action shooter category, there's no way for me to get to a list of, you know, action shooter classified movies. I have to search individually by title. And so that's where Steam could go really wrong. As long as you have full access to all the different categories you want, you know, it's okay that the, you know, like I said, it makes its best guess bubble up to the top. But the second it starts saying, okay, well, really there's no easy way for Cole to get to a, you know, Modern Warfare 2 page because we don't think he'll ever be interested in it. While that might be true, now you're starting to hide stuff from me, and that's where it gets really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Ben, it sounds like you've been trying to cut in with some stuff here. So I'm gonna open up the way.
I was going to talk about something, a slightly bigger issue that I heard something kind of a similar discussion about, where talking about app settings and about kind of limiting the amount of information they can gain on you. And so I think a recent thing that MIT proposed was basically centralize where the raw data is stored and have app developers request information from that and kind of obscure it slightly. So like an example, like with Google Maps, how they take people's locations to determine the time it takes. Like instead of them knowing exactly who it is, they can just tell them, okay, there's this many people at this place, you know, like where you can still achieve the same results, but kind of not hand over all the information that you have, you know.
Mm-hmm. The difficulty with some of that is, I mean, that's definitely a good idea, although that creates a single point of failure. And it's also a thing where it's really, really hard to anonymize data.
Okay.
I read a thing recently where, it was a write-up on, like, Obama's data mining for the campaign. And basically, even though everyone votes anonymously, they know how every single person in America voted. Because you can pull in all the other data to where you have, you know, and I'm making up a statistic, but, you know, a 90-something percent chance this is probably how that person voted. You know, and that's like, actually Netflix was one of the biggest drivers of research in this area. They had the Netflix Prize?
Yeah, where basically, the Open Challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they ultimately had to abandon it because they found that you could track back to figure out who all the data came from, even though it was anonymized.
Okay.
What was it? There was a story. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, but I mean, I think they're on the right track, like especially Android's security settings are really, really messed up. Yeah. But,
There's a story about Target. Where they, they started, you know, doing like loyalty tracking and stuff and sending out promotional materials. And there was a teenage daughter and her parents. And all of a sudden, one day, they get a pamphlet saying, "So you're expecting," right? Because of the you know, not teenage, like college age, youngish daughter was shopping in such a way, not like buying, you know, Pampers or whatnot, not buying diapers and formula, but just like, oh, we're gonna get this, and the daughter knew, but the parents didn't.
See, the story I heard was that they knew before the person knew. Oh. That just by the buying habits of the person, they could tell that they were pregnant.
We see you're craving these items.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
that wouldn't surprise me.
I think
for pickles and peanut butter.
Yeah, Cole's version is the truth, and I think Ben, yours might be slightly exaggerated.
Yeah, but like what grosses me out, and I may just be, you know, like reactionary or Luddite or whatever, is when people put that forward as like a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like what it comes down to is it is a thing, and we need to decide whether it's good or not.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Just like, okay, so what I don't want Valve to, so I have a lot of trust in Valve, right?
Sure.
So I'm very heavily invested in the Steam ecosystem, so this could be construed as sunk cost or whatever. But like in general, they've done right by me in the past. What I don't want them to turn into is Google, who used to have done right by me, but it's common knowledge that everything is for sale. Like if Valve can hold on to this and keep it, you know, and keep gearing this towards A, the consumer, and B, like the developers, so that like everybody benefits, awesome and great. Like this is a relatively closed system with very few like open loops in it. And, you know, it's not going to be like, okay, I'm in the middle of a game and they're going to pop up like a fucking energy drink ad like you would if you were playing on Xbox One or 360. Yeah, but like the second that starts happening, and I guess I'm worried about what could be, because like we probably should have seen it when the tags were brought in, but like nothing good this way lies, at least historically in the past.
See, I agree. I kind of understand what you're saying. I would almost take the other approach, and I would say the sooner we realize that there are no good guys, the sooner we can start dealing with protecting people.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it is a truism that everything sooner or later will be for sale unless policy makes it not for sale.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about multiplayer? Is there anything else?
No, I'm good and depressed now. Let's do multiplayer.
Okay. Well, the weird thing is my wish list has ballooned because of this change. Like, oh, I want that.
So to be fair, it works.
Yeah, it does. And I don't know if I like that it works.
is this just us kind of like gripping the sides of our seats and going, I'm worried, guys. I'm really worried, guys. I'm worried.
Right now isn't the time to be worried. 10 years ago was the time to be worried. Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now let's start with the multiplayer, where we engage with you, the listeners, and maybe offer a thing or two of our own. Dennis, what's the question?
The question is, first off, you know, we've got to establish, we all know that graphics do not necessarily mean good aesthetics, but still, every once in a while, there's a game that can blow you away with its technical prowess. So the question was, what has been your biggest wow moment based on a game's graphics or technology?
Yeah. Let's see.
What is that picture from?
That is actually, so this is on Facebook. It is a screenshot from the original PS2 demo for the Emotion Engine. PS3? Was that the Ducks? Wow.
I think PS3 was the Ducks.
I think they've always done Ducks, because I remember Ducks on the PS2. They were showing Ducks, and they were showing, oh my gosh, a real-time render of the dance scene from Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay. That might have been PS2. No, this one, because I searched the name of the game, this was a tech demo used for PS3, and then eventually they actually made it into a real game that you could get on the PSN, and it was god-awful.
Because it's a tech demo. Yeah. Tech demos don't make good games.
No.
Yeah. Except for Wii Sports. That was pretty good. See, that sounds like a sick burn against Wii Sports, but I love Wii Sports.
No, it's good. Yeah, no.
Okay,
sports friends, if your game has the name sports in it, it's probably awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I accept that, yes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, you know, Carnival Sports or Deca Sports or any of the other, like, lots of bad sports games on the Wii. Oh, David, what does Omega Moose say?
Omega Moose says, it may be cliche. Wow, I hate that word. I really hate that word. It may be cliche, but yeah. I remember loving the way Skyrim looked when it was released. How natural the forests, mountains, and snow looked, and then the amazing detail on the dragons. Of course, it's probably also a good example of how fleeting good graphics are. Since within a month, enamored as I was with the graphics, I started installing texture mods to make it even more so. P.S. Love the image to go with the prompt this week.
Yeah. I still think Skyrim looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm. The modded version or the original version?
Original.
Okay.
I know. This one's going to be kind of a curmudgeon answer for me. I'm not sure I can think of a game like that. I think most games waste their graphics, in that graphics are only, at least to me, important if they actually do something with those graphics. So, like, you know, Skyrim had a lot of cool mountains and stuff, but there was never a time where any gameplay ever revolved around actually, like, climbing mountains or anything like that. Like, I just...
Story climaxes at the top of the tallest mountain in Skyrim.
Okay, to be fair, I gave up a long time before the story climax.
Fusroda is climbing a mountain. Yeah. Why is he climbing the mountain?
No, I'm just saying, like, I felt like, I feel like stuff like that only matters to me if you're going to build your game around, like, three-dimensionality, where I'm, like, Assassin's Creed-ing down on people.
So there was never even a moment where you're like, ooh, pretty, before you realized there was nothing good to do with the pretty?
I mean, yeah, vaguely, but that's, I don't really care about that, like... I don't know. Not high on my priorities.
So, like, you wouldn't even say that, like, Stalker benefited from its kind of graphical treatment, or at least the amount of information it could show you to kind of build that world out for you.
I would say, like, Stalker worked because it used that information.
Well, yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah. So
that would be the thing that would impress you.
Yeah, I would say mine would probably be like Stalker. I think even though it's dated now, I think Half-Life 2 got a lot of mileage out of its graphics for storytelling. I would say City of Heroes, because they actually did use a lot of verticality with its gameplay.
Yeah. So. Okay. Cool. Ben, what's Brian say?
Brian says that moment in Journey. If you've played it, you know the one. It's the only time I've been completely overwhelmed by the beauty of a video game, as well as the closest a game has come to the majesty of nature. I, in fact, don't know the moment that he's talking about, because I can think of two or three that were pretty breathtaking.
Yeah. No, it's the moment.
I still don't get it, man. If it's the first moment, then I understand what he's talking about.
Maybe he's talking. Now you're causing me to doubt myself. I was going to say what could be considered the climax of the game is what he's referencing.
The last moment?
The climax of the game is what I'll call it.
Yeah.
But I think I love what he's saying. You know, it wasn't necessarily a graphical, you know, or technological feat, but it stood in contrast to the rest of the game where, you know, its Journey is very stylized and pretty minimalistic for most of the game. And you get to this turning point where it's like, all right, now we're going to blow it out. And it still all fits within the aesthetic, but they do, you know, it's kind of on overdrive. And so it really does have that wow factor.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, that could probably run on pretty much anything out there.
Yeah.
So Brian needs to message back and or PM back and figure out
what's going on. How about you, Ben? Like what's your what carries the most juice for you?
So I can think of a couple, and of course they're all games that we've talked about plenty of times before, but Knights of the Republic, I remember the first time playing that, the loading screens when you go from one planet to another totally blew me away the first time I saw this, because the graphics were really good for their time. So when you go from any planet to the other, it just shows a cutscene while it's loading the next map, and it shows your ship take off the planet and then land on the other one. Mm-hmm. But part of what made it so cool is the first time you go to the other planets, there's such beautiful introductory videos to the planets. You know, they really capture kind of the character of the planet. But then on top of that, there's some within the planet, like specifically Kashyyyk, the forest planet. There's a cutscene where you go from the top of the forest to the bottom, and it's just a beautiful cutscene of just the forest elevator from afar, and you really get a good feel for the environment that you're in, you know?
Yeah.
On top of that, also pretty much any part of Shadow of the Colossus was pretty breathtaking. So,
I have to give that one its due. That's a game that is very, very pretty.
It's just a graphic feast. Yeah.
It's not even like stylized. Like, yeah, there are like, you know, strong aesthetic choices behind it, but there is like a great deal of fidelity. And, you know, if we're talking about technical impressiveness, scale. Right.
Yeah, well, the draw distance, you're just like, oh my god, it really does go on forever.
I can see for miles.
Ego 2 actually is pretty strong, although it's almost the opposite way, where a lot of what impressed me of that is just the, you know, the way the castle fit together and kind of the like pseudo Escher-esque things.
Yeah. I remember in Eco, there's a scene where you go outside. It's like under a windmill. It was like it was in the demo, and then they built it out further in the actual game, where there's a pool of water, and it was the first kind of realistic water I've seen, and that it has surface reflections and stuff. I remember just playing around with that, like seeing the ripples go. Same thing, in fact, for the first stage of Splinter Cell, where they have the freezer flaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like, guys, like I did everything short of calling my mom down. Like, mom, look at this. The freezer flaps, mom.
That was weird because, like, for a while, that was like, I guess this was like on the PlayStation 2. There's a time when, like, every game had to have that.
You get cloth physics and you get cloth physics.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, Prince of Persia, like, going out of its way, like, it was a rule that every puzzle had to have at least one, like, hanging cloth scroll thing.
Well, yeah, because you did the slowdown, like the swashbuckler down the sail, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what about Batman's cape in Arkham Asylum?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
Let's see here. Dennis, what's Murph say?
Murph says, Rezogun made me boggle at the number of things moving at the same time, especially when everything explodes at the end of the level. Yeah. And this is interesting to me because Rezogun is by the same guys who did Super Stardust.
Yeah.
And that game already, I thought, had as many particles on the screen at once as possible. So I'd be interested. I haven't watched gameplay of Rezogun, but I'd be interested to see how they could possibly fit more on the screen.
Yeah. I wonder at that point, so in a bullet hell shooter like that, you know, it's like a Gradius alike, like eventually that level of detail has to hinder your ability to like read the screen, right?
Yeah, maybe. It depends on how it's used. So like, you know, not everything that's moving is a danger to you. It's a lot of kind of effects and background noise. Yeah. And as long as they signpost the stuff that is meaningful enough, the other stuff fades into the background, which I guess at that point you can ask, why is it there in the first place? But yeah. It does all add up to a pretty cool experience when everything is exploding at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Dennis? What got you?
The one that came to mind for me was actually Resistance Fall of Man. When they first started demoing it, was right in the heyday of ragdoll physics.
Yeah.
And everything had ragdoll physics, but they weren't, you know, it was fun to watch stuff flop around, but it wasn't realistic at all. And Resistance Fall of Man was the first game, at least that I saw, it might have been the first game, period, that blended kind of intelligent pre-programmed animation with the ragdoll physics. Mm-hmm. So that when you killed an enemy, you know, when you shot an enemy, it would fall back, you know, like it'd been hit with ragdoll physics, but it would also like clutch its chest.
Yeah.
Or you know, it would fall over a barrier with ragdoll physics, but it would also try to catch itself. Or, you know, that sort of stuff. And that was just, you know, it took this thing that I thought was really cool at first and then got totally jaded with ragdoll physics and put this new twist on it that just blew my mind because it looks so much more realistic. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, ragdoll physics wasn't realistic. It just had realistic physics. And even then, not really. This actually took it to the level of feeling realistic.
Yeah.
From a motion standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And you see that a little bit too whenever you look at something like, oh, obviously that was mo-capped, but, or obviously that was, you know, keyframed, like, okay, you know, trying to draw that. But when they're able to mix the two of them in a very seamless way, mm-hmm. I think Metal Gear actually does a really good job at that.
I thought Metal Gear's big thing was that everything was keyframed, or is that Splinter Cell? That might have been Splinter Cell.
Maybe Splinter Cell.
Yeah,
I know. Okay. I know at least the martial arts in Metal Gear is crazy, crazy realistic and like in detail.
Yeah.
CQC.
Well, you can't bring up the mocap in Metal Gear Solid 3 without bringing up the fact that like shortly into the production, they decided to so they had two actors for Big Boss. They had the martial arts action guy, and they had the dramatic acting guy, okay? And then eventually they switched the two of them because they liked him being awkward in both cases. So, like, when Ava goes to kiss him and he's like, I don't know what to do, that's this crazy stunt guy trying to figure out how do I act in a dramatic scene. And him kind of fumbling through stuff, that's this dramatic actor being put through his paces.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
I know,
that's
right?
Really cool.
Yeah. I love that game so much.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Wow. David Petroco writes in, while not the prettiest game in the world by most graphical standards, I remember when I went from playing WoW on a laptop that chugged along at around 10 to 15 frames per second on minimum settings to my new gaming computer that ran at 60 frames per second with everything at max. I flew around for a good half hour enjoying how much crisper and vibrant the world was.
Nice.
Yeah. That can be a step up. So like, I think WoW is the poster child for like, oh, it's your art design, not your technical, you know, aptitude, right? But there is something to be said for that. Like when you see a game through like a new set of eyes, I had something very similar to that when I went from playing Dark Souls 2 on PS2 to playing it on PC.
PS3.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Dark Souls 2 on PS2.
Early access. No, PS3.
I know a guy.
Yeah. I knew a guy over from. No, PS3 over to PC. It is like playing an HD remake of that game.
Huh.
Yeah. So yeah, David stole mine. I think I have Half-Life on the brain because we just recorded slash released the Half-Life episode of like that is a game that I bought a new computer specifically for, right? Like I, you know, like built a PC around I want to play Half-Life 2 when it comes out. So like opening up on the G-Man and seeing that, you know, seeing that facial animation and that level of detail and the, you know, the like the crazy imperfect skin. And just as you proceed, like, wow, this city looks like nothing I've ever seen before. I think that even still, it looks great to me, even though that game is 10 years old, which says to me that, like, unlike a lot of these other examples I would put out, like, oh, EverQuest, after the Luklan expansion came out, the one where you go to the moon and they did a graphical overhaul and everything, that was, like, astonishing in a way that was just completely unexpected to me at the time, right? Or... you know, I wonder how good like The Last of Us is gonna look right now, specifically because, or you know, look 10 years from now, specifically because of like how realistic it's trying to be. I think Half-Life 2 is so strongly art directed, it's that awesome intersection of art direction and tech where like I don't know if it's ever gonna look bad. You know, you can take this as you know to you can make fun of me for this later, but I still think Half-Life 2 looks fucking amazing. But because that was already brought up, I need to throw off to another one, which is Silent Hill 2 and 3. The Shadows, guys. The Shadows.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's art direction. And, you know, that's all very intentionally composed in a lot of ways. But, like, everything, like, every other horror game and pretty much every other game I played before Silent Hill 2. Remember, this was 2001, like a year after the PS2 release. And even early PS2 games didn't look that good. It was Dorito people running around. Like this, like even still today, they
you
look
mean Pyramid Head.
Yeah, to the max. Yeah, like
Pyramid Head Loco.
Brands are the new Pyramid Head.
Yeah. Yeah, and even that still, like yes, there is very strong art direction in that. Those are still some like explicitly some of the most horrifying, you know, constructs I've seen on a screen. But the tech there, I it will be outstripped, of course, obviously, because Shadows have gotten so much more sophisticated than that. But the grand effect that they come together to, you know, to put out, like that leaves a huge mark, right?
And they introduced the flashlight in such a good way too.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Just compare Silent Hill 1 to Silent Hill 2, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. You can do that, Dennis. You still have my copy of Silent Hill 1.
I do. It's circle shadows, right? Just like a little...
A little bit, yeah. It's like you can look at it and see like, oh, yeah, that's a shadow. Not like I can identify exactly what that is and see it coming from around a corner because of the shadow.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see here. Who wants to pick up Christopher Schley?
I do.
Yeah.
Chris says probably Morrowind in each Half-Life iteration. Weren't people crazy for all those Crysis games as far as graphics? I vaguely remember that, but I never played them. Recently, Valiant Hearts: The Great War has impressed me. Nothing crazy 3D, but I found the animation beautiful.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a tech demo for Crysis where they literally like walked back and forth through a plant, through a bush to show how it rustled. Look at the rustling. Look at it.
Accept it.
I feel like Crysis is almost the poster child for like the contrapoint or whatever to the whole like kind of what Cole was talking about, where like art direction and like intelligent use of your system is really important, because like nothing that Crysis did now seems relevant or fancy or whatever at all. Even on systems that don't require near the development, because ultimately they didn't do anything particularly interesting. They just threw a crap ton of processing power at the problem. Does that make sense?
Isn't that the computer science way?
Yeah.
No, that is the opposite of the computer science way.
Yeah. Like Crysis and Valiant Hearts are on the exact opposite ends of the spectrum, right?
Right.
Yeah. That is exactly the thing. Man, Crysis. Like, I couldn't be less excited about a game, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about it with enthusiasm outside of like, ooh, I used this to benchmark my system.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because all the ones after it, like, they've progressively abandoned their whole model, whereas like the most recent ones are straight up like completely linear Call of Duty set piece games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's weird is like Crysis 2 was far more interesting to me because like the massive technological achievement that they made wasn't so much like how good can we get this to look, but how scalable can we make it? So like, what's the range of systems that we can make this look like stunning on? And then everybody whined because consoles are ruining everything. Yeah.
So, I mean, as true as that may be. So actually, Cole, your discussion reminded me of what should probably be my answer to this. So just quickly, seeing the Earthrise on in EverQuest, or I guess it would be what, the Norath Rise?
Yeah.
That was pretty beautiful. That was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget what zone that is. I think it was one of those like void zones where
I'd also like to throw out the train in Uncharted 2 was pretty impressive the first time you played that as well.
Yeah, I'm surprised Uncharted didn't come up, actually.
I was going to bring it up. That was my version of the flaps, the freezer flaps, when the first little like pool of water in the original Uncharted, and you got out and his jeans were wet. Yeah. So I just played with
and
that.
And then my jeans were wet.
Ooh.
The animation that truly was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Uncharted 2, like, I think the most impressive, like, the most technically impressive part of that game for me was the Tibetan village.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty, I don't know. So it's pretty. It's pretty end of sentence. So here's the crazy thing, Dennis, before we go on and go to this other thing. When you said Resistance Fall of Man, I had to Google that game.
Oh man.
I have no recollection of what it is. And here's what I think is happening or will have happened or has already happened. Okay. I think that the Resistance series is good. Like, it's going to be that generation's Siphon Filter.
How so?
In that there are more games in that series than you would think, but nobody remembers them.
Oh, well, yeah, because after the first one, it all turned into kind of random sci-fi mush.
Like, yeah, it lost its distinctness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of, the plot got off the rails with the second one, and I don't think I ever even played the third one, but it's one of those things where it's like, we start with humans lost the war.
Mm-hmm.
And then how many times can you win back the war and then lose it again and then win it back and then lose it again and have things still be interesting?
And when do they cross over with Killzone? Because those might as well have been the same game.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I still can't get over the degree to which Killzone is just a retelling of World War II and no one seems to notice.
I think that's come out. I think the comparisons of the Hellgas to the Axis forces has been made.
See, but it's not even that. Like, if you follow the plot lines of the game, they straight up follow like the events of World War II.
Yeah.
Huh.
To the point where what the most recent one is, we ended the war by nuking a whole bunch of people, but now the main bad guy city is in turmoil because it's divided down the center by a big wall where one side's all right and the other side's in poverty.
Yeah, I think there's probably worse you can do.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. Yeah. I mean, it's really well done. I just think it's funny how blatant it is.
Well, yeah, that was the multiplayer section. Thank you, everybody, for responding to that. Generally, those prompts go up on our Facebook wall on Tuesday afternoons. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast if you are at all curious about those. Why don't we go on to the grind?
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over this past week. Dennis, I know you've been playing something great, so I want to throw off to you first.
I might have something to talk about.
Well, I liked your tweet about my stupid joke at the beginning of Bonfireside Chat. Yeah. Taking a cold, hard look at the mirror night.
Yeah.
I write those in haste right before we record.
And is that right?
It's one of the last things I write, and generally I do the notes at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And each week is a contest to one up myself.
You go through it so straight faced.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you might as well be reading the stock ticker or something. And it's just I heard that and just lost it. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's my mission accomplished, I guess.
It's my favorite when somehow somebody else starts reading it. It's like, okay, have fun with that.
Yeah.
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 But go on. Continue.
Yeah. Shovel Knight finally came out on Mac, which means that I finally bought it and am getting to go through. So I'm through the first three levels, I think. The Spectre Knight, the King Knight, and who's the first one? The Red Knight or the Dark Knight or whoever that guy is. Yeah. So, and honestly, that's the part of the game that has stood out to me the most is just really well-conceived and well-executed boss battles. So I think the King Knight was the only one that I got on my first try, but every single one has felt very fair and very kind of creative. They don't feel samey, at least yet. And, they kind of each test your ability to recognize patterns in a different way. Yeah. So I've really appreciated that. And they do that in a way that still feels like a duel. I appreciate that. That's a lot of fun when you're fighting a character that's really roughly the same size you are and kind of moves or has the many of the same moves that you do.
Yeah.
It's just a really fun fight. So they do that without making it feel overly kind of mechanical or patternized while still kind of forcing you to think, okay, so if I jump at him, he'll always block. But if I wait for him to attack me and then jump, then I get a chance to get a hit in. And it feels more like strategy than just solving a puzzle based on patterns.
Yeah. That varies up too. Like they start throwing in different sizes of bosses. I don't want to spoil anything, but like the boss fights stay varied in a way that the platforming does not.
Good. Yeah, it's clear that they were a focus of the designers.
Yeah, well, I mean, just look at Mega Man, which was their key influence, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I have never played DuckTales to compare the bouncing mechanic to it, but that feels really good. So I've heard it's inspired by DuckTales and so I assume it retains the high quality of DuckTales because that's really fun. And the platforming has been good so far in that it has just the right amount of secret areas and has them hidden just well enough to make it fun to discover them and make it frequent to discover them without feeling like they're giving it away every time.
Yeah. And they codify what you're looking for in the platforming for the secret areas in such a way that like it is, you know, as long as you're paying attention, you're sure to find them. It's not like some kind of, you know, Metroid bullshit where like I might as well just bomb this whole screen in order to see it.
Yeah. Right? Well, and it's also as long as I'm paying attention and just stop for a second to think about how I need to get up there. And so it's, you know, it's like, okay, well, I better wait to kill this enemy until he's under the ladder that I want to get to. And that feels really good. So that, you know, once you figure that out and execute it, it feels really good. Yeah. So I am, you know, I'm not sure how far into it I am. Like I said, I've beaten the first three bosses and I don't remember seeing a percent next to my profile or anything like that, but it's very fun.
It's a shorter game than you would imagine it would be, actually.
Mm-hmm. And I'll throw in a brief little plug. That's one of the things that I've been streaming anytime I play it.
Yeah.
So if you want to see my first playthrough of Shovel Knight, come check out that. That's twitch.tv/greenlaser, GRENLASER 73.
Nice. Yeah. You've been really, really active on that.
And I feel bad because I've realized now that I'm starting to follow people on Twitch that you get an email notification whenever someone starts a stream. And I think that's kind of with the idea that they, you know, they do it once in a while. Like it's kind of more of a dedicated session. Whereas I just kind of throw on streaming anytime that I'm playing.
Yeah.
And I'll leave the microphone muted unless I see someone is watching, in which case I'll turn it on. But it's like, you know, I one thing I've tried to do recently is look at, okay, where can I consume less and produce more? And just, you know, as a rule of thumb, it's always better to entertain yourself by producing versus just consuming. And so that's kind of streaming my stuff is a small way that I can kind of turn my time with video games into a productive thing rather than just a consuming thing. This podcast obviously being the other main outlet for that. So,
yeah. Nice.
Sorry to anyone whose email I'm spamming.
I think, yeah, it's up to them to control which alerts they get. So what else?
That's really it. I mean, I've been playing a lot more Hearthstone. So what I've been doing with the streaming, probably the main thing I do is I am nowhere near good enough. I think I talked about this 2 weeks ago, maybe nowhere near good enough at the game to build my own deck in the arena mode, but I'll kind of go in and have people advise me on what I should do and then see how far I can take that deck. So the first one I went 2 wins before I lost out, which is, you know, tied with the best I've ever done. The second one I got 1 win, but that's because, you know, I was absolutely terrible and no matter what, I was going to have a hard time, but just based on the cards that I got. And then the final time, I went 7 wins, which I think it tops you out at 12. So that was an incredible run. And I got back one, it gave me back, the money I paid to get in and then some, or the in-game gold that I paid to get in and then some, as well as like 3 other rewards. So I got a major payout.
Nice.
So I'm hooked.
Hey, you're making some headway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
But I feel like I've explained that game to death. So,
well, and the audience is pretty involved in helping you along too, it seems.
Yeah. And that's made it a lot more fun. Again, one, just going from consuming to producing, and then it's always, I'm extroverted. So it's always fun to do things as part of a group rather than just alone. Mm-hmm. And that way I have someone to blame when I fail.
Yeah. You fuckers steer me wrong. I'm out. Stream no, it's closed.
Any success I have had is totally because I've had some very smart people helping me out.
Yeah.
Most notably, I'll call them out on the show. Brian Wade and Tim Schumacher, I think.
Yeah.
Have been two very influential people in my strategy and deck building and all that stuff, and they've done right, as evidenced by my last run.
Yeah. Well, that's very kind of them.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, who wants to go next?
I could go.
Go.
So, I think it was last week, actually, maybe even the week before that, Gauntlet came out.
Yeah.
Slade, who is one of the viewers of our show, sent me a copy, and so I played with him and Jala, and I'm not sure if they're a viewer or not, Nolan. But it's, you know, it's a throwback to the original Gauntlet game, and it's really, really good. It's not exactly, you know, it's not like a remake or like an update or something like that. It strikes me as more being kind of, I would say almost like the way a simulation is to reality. In this is like a simulation of the original Gauntlet, in which, you know, they don't really seem to try put any effort into keeping the mechanics the same, but they try to like put in things that are references to the mechanics. So like one of the big ones is, you know, one of the biggest reoccurring villains in Gauntlet is Death, who, you know, he's the Grim Reaper that, you know, will appear and drain your life. And he's been, you know, in every Gauntlet game. Well, their version in this is basically certain floors of the dungeon are death floors. And so when you enter into them, you know, Death will appear and start chasing you. And he'll, you know, basically every so often disappear and then later on reappear and start chasing you, and effectively turns it into kind of the gauntlet equivalent of like the scrolling levels in Mario Party, mm-hmm. or not Mario Party, but Mario.
Yeah.
Where if he's got this like cloud that surrounds him, and if you stay in the cloud for more than a second or two, you instantly die.
Yeah.
So I know the game overall, it kind of tries to set it up to be a sort of competitive co-op type thing where you're definitely working together, but you collect gold separately, and at the end it, you know, gives each one a score and ranks you. And, you know, theoretically if you wanted to, you can, you know, try to either, you know, be very mercenary in how you go after, you know, collecting the gold, or alternately purposely sabotage other players.
Yeah.
But we've pretty much been playing just working together, but
yeah.
It's really, really cool. I'm playing as the elf. The classes are you know, you can play as a warrior, a Valkyrie, a wizard, or an elf. And each one's very different gameplay. The wizard kind of stands out. It's basically a heavily simplified version of the Magicka system.
Oh, so you're trying to match colors?
Yeah, so basically each class, your moves are made up of like something like four different buttons. So it's like shift, space, left click, and right click. And so like as like the elf, space drops a bomb, whereas shift is like a dive roll. Whereas for the wizard, each of those cues up a different element, and then you put together two elements to create a spell.
Are you playing this with a keyboard or with a controller?
I'm playing it with a keyboard. However, it supports both and recommends a controller.
Yeah.
I just am too cheap right now to buy a controller.
I could see that being a nightmare on a computer, actually.
Yeah, so far I haven't noticed with this particular class it being a problem, but mm-hmm. I could see it being a problem with like I could see the wizard, for example, being much better on a controller.
Yeah, that in particular I think is what I'm kind of nodding toward.
Yeah, yeah.
So Gauntlet, you know, starting back in the arcade and then going up to, you know, I guess still the arcade with Dark Legacy, but the console, you know, the console ones were geared around having multiplayer with people who were, you know, kind of in close proximity, either standing at that cabinet or, you know, sitting on your couch, right?
Right.
Have they kind of updated that or made concessions or maintained the... you know, the feel of that for online multiplayer, because at least you're not playing it single player. Does it feel as effective, you know, when you're just in voice chat with some dudes?
Yeah, it seems effective to me. You know, it's still you all have to be on the same screen. So, you know, there's a limit to the degree to which you can wander away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maintained. You know, mostly we're communicating via, like you said, via voice chat. I'm not sure how well it would work or how fun it would be just going around doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like it does. It's, you know, the gameplay is a little bit simplified. It almost feels like playing a MOBA,
mm-hmm.
except, story based, so nothing like a MOBA, but anyways,
yeah.
but yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so you have to keep us tapped in on that. Yep. Anything else?
How my question is, how long is it? Like, you know, is it a pretty meaty campaign, or is it something that you kind of run multiple times?
I'm not sure. You know, traditionally it seems like Gauntlet has been, or at least Gauntlet Legends was very much you run multiple times. There are three levels, and each level it looks like has approximately three dungeons, and each dungeon has like three or four floors. So it looks like a dungeon would be about a playthrough, so like say somewhere between a half hour and an hour to play through a dungeon. So I would say in between. It strikes me as being a game that's meant to be played over and over again, and you know, compete. It's got a scoreboard, so it seems like it's meant to be played for score over and over again. At the same time, it seems reasonably long.
You played anything else?
Just one other thing. I got back into Borderlands 2 a little bit. I don't know. Not a whole lot to say about that. I'm just kind of chugging along through the story.
Yeah.
What part of the story are you at?
I just got to Sanctuary Disappeared and Reappeared. And okay. you make your way back.
Yep.
So that's, I don't know, that's sort of interesting. I can't decide if Tina is hilarious or annoying.
That's fair.
I know. Did you have a feeling on that?
I could tell that the developers liked her.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so are you playing this like in preparation for the pre-sequel or what?
Yeah, some yes, some no. I saw the trailer for the pre-sequel, and it looked kind of interesting, so that's kind of what reminded me to get back to playing it. Mm-hmm. I haven't decided yet the degree to which I'm excited for the pre-sequel. I can't decide how much I like this story or not. Mm-hmm. Like, I know. It's just kind of mixed for me.
What level are you right now?
I'm like level 19.
Oh wow.
Okay. I might have a character in the same range that I designed specifically as kind of a healer. So it's only really good to play with other people. So I might have to jump in with you.
She's around the same area. This is on PC.
No. Ah. Yeah.
I cannot play the game virtually at all on console. I just don't have. I cannot use the controller.
But, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like the game is just now starting to give me decent weapons. It seems like I feel like they made the guns a little bit too niche-y to where a lot of them don't work that well.
I've heard that's another thing that playing with multiple people helps with, because obviously, you know, the more people you're playing with, the harder or the more rare bosses show up. It's the more badasses show up in the game's parlance. So you know, that's when you start getting those rare weapons more frequently that aren't like the gimmick weapons that you get as quest prizes.
Right. Yeah. I just, for me, I think it's more to a degree to where it's like a lot of the manufacturers, I don't like their gimmick that they put on every single gun. And so it's a thing where they kind of conflate, often certain stats and certain gimmicks go together, and I find that is often problematic. So.
Pick the gun that you throw away to reload it.
Yeah. See, I find that's actually a detriment to me. Like, that's one I use a lot because that's one of the least annoying gimmicks. But the problem is that uses up ammo.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to, particularly on shotguns, I tend to reload whenever my clip's not full. And since it's a shotgun, I'll drop someone in one or two clips. And so I go through ammo really, really quick with those guns.
You know, I only remember the animation of it for the pistol. I would love to see what the animation is for the shotgun of you throwing a shotgun at somebody.
there are some great animations with a number of the weapons. I still like the fact that they included fanning the revolvers.
Yeah. Oh, David, the other thing you do... is the whole system with golden keys?
Yes.
So if you follow the right people on Twitter, it's really easy to get a lot of golden keys because they'll just tweet out codes every once in a while. And that, if you go back every couple of levels and cash them in, can be good for keeping yourself stocked with really high-level weapons.
Nice. I'll have to check into that. Yeah, I found like my go-to is right now I'm finding a lot of robots, which is any corrosive weapon. Mm-hmm. All the corrosive weapons, but so yeah, it's interesting. I feel it's a little weird. They don't do a particularly strong, like, it's very much the guy you're fighting is like a comically horrible person, but they don't do a very good job of making like any of the people you're fighting for are not actually even close to decent people.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, I don't know. I feel like it's almost a balancing act that I'm not sure they quite struck, where some of that's the point of the game. It's actually really funny. On the other hand, there's a lot of parts where it's supposed to be good versus evil, and they can't always quite pull it off.
The game is supposed to be a good guy
just straight up hired you to murder someone a mission ago.
Yeah, the game does not do genuine or sincere very well.
Well, it really ought not to.
Yeah, it's not really a shtick.
Not the point.
Yeah, it's more a thing where I'd say it's just, I feel like certain things in the story just don't quite work because of that. It's not necessarily that was the wrong decision. It's more just a consequence of that is certain things don't work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've thought about doing a challenge run of that game where if I see a weapon, I have to pick it up and I'm only allowed to. So it's like, you know, roulette in terms of weapons.
That would be interesting, especially because do they still have the, at least in Borderlands 1, if you held down the pickup button, you would just pick it up and immediately start using it.
Yep.
So that could be it. Yeah, there's a lot of fun runs you could do, especially with some of the weirder unique weapons. So there's like a bunch of weird unique shields. So like there's one that basically has a crazy long charge time and, you know, it's very easy to break, but when it breaks, it like triples your melee damage or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the entirety of the game is to let people shoot you until it breaks and then just punch them to death.
Nice.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm still hoping though for a Sir Hammerlock game. That is what I actually want.
The British gentleman.
Yes, he is. Like I said, all the other characters I kind of dislike. He is awesome.
For as silly as like Claptrap is, the mission of his birthday party is like eerily realistic, and like a surprising amount of empathy is given over to him in that mission, for me at least.
Oh, really? I haven't tried that one yet.
See, right. It's funny because I think Claptrap is a successful character because everyone hates him so much. Like it's funny in a way, but then it gets old really quick, and then you're just kind of annoyed with him. And I think that's exactly what they were going for. Like, it's not he's funny annoying, it's he's annoying.
Right. And I don't remember him being like that in the first game. Like, I don't know. Maybe I just didn't notice it.
Yes.
Yeah. But yes, the game is certain NPCs are very lucky that there's no friendly fire.
Ben, how about you? What you been playing?
So I purchased Destiny.
Nice.
For what?
I have not played it yet though. So I will play that tonight.
Wait.
Is this on PlayStation 2 or 3?
On PlayStation 3.
I'm about to pick up now.
They keep coming out with games on both PS3 and PS4, and it's like, well, PS3, free online multiplayer. PS4, $50 a year multiplayer. Do the PS3 option.
Yeah, but if you don't have PlayStation Plus, you're doing it wrong. So
I don't think that's the case if you don't own a Vita.
Actually, that's a valid point.
Yeah.
Like, I would say PlayStation Plus used to be a great deal if you owned a PlayStation 3. It's been months since there's been a PlayStation 3 game on one. But
which is surprising to me with the launch of PlayStation 4, because I just assumed once the next generation came out, they'd put bigger and bigger name titles as the free games on PS3.
I just don't like being locked into like a fixed pay every year sort of thing to play the games that you want to play.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what you think of the visuals, because from my understanding, that's one of the only things to recommend it, but like one of the things that does recommend Destiny as like a, like, oh, this is a Bungie shooter on a new platform. It needs to look good. Like, I wonder how much of it's going to impress you without the candy.
The way I've heard it described is it's a pretty terrible game and I just played it for the last 12 hours.
The only thing I hear is just people complaining about the guy who voices the narrator.
Oh, Peter Dinklage, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I didn't
know. Yeah, you spoiled it for him, man.
how dare you?
No, it's not a spoiler. But the thing that I'm interested to see is, normally what I would say is I'm really excited for Destiny 2. Because it feels like it has the same problem that Assassin's Creed did, which is, wow, really cool world, nothing to do. And then the second game kind of fixed that. But since it's got so much MMO in its mains, it kind of lends itself to being continually patched and updated. Mm-hmm. And because the focus of it is on next gen, although you've got it on current gen, but you know that the next generation of consoles are kind of designed around being more flexible and patching games that way. So I almost wonder if it's going to be a worthwhile purchase in 3 months, whereas it definitely was not a worthwhile purchase at launch.
Well, they've a big part of the story around Destiny is that this is a 10-year deal with Activision. They've already confirmed there will be sequels, there will be expansion packs, all of that. Right. So I think it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to happen. I just wonder, like, so much of what I see is like they're trying to sow the seeds for get in early and you're going to have the best time with this. And it's almost like they're trying to just throw all their juice at wrapping everybody into the ecosystem to make them as like attached to it as possible.
Huh.
Because like 10 years is a really, really long time. Like WoW has been out for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know,
but again,
fair,
I
that
don't know.
Is kind of the model that worked for a while.
Well, yeah. And then for nobody else.
But I think it's the difference that I'm drawing is, you know, every new game franchise tries to iterate. Usually it's in the form of sequels. With this one, it's going to be much more in the form of just patching the original game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the never underestimate the fun of low gravity mode. One of my friends who got the game simply posted a video of her simply jumping across the city for like 5 minutes.
Nice.
Whee!
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so you'll have to let us know what you think of that, especially like the online play. Good.
I put one of my biases aside of, in the trailer it shows them fighting on Venus, on the surface of Venus, and it's like, you can't do that. I've taken an astronomy class.
Why can't you do that? I know nothing of these things.
It's very hot there. It's like, I don't know, 600, 900 degrees on the surface. Yeah. You could make like a cloud city work on Venus. Like if it were high enough, the temperature would be like, you know, kind of like what Earth is. But
that just puts you closer to the sun.
Yeah, but it also puts you closer to Lando Calrissian.
we all want to be
reading,
there.
And you know he's cool.
Works every time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't the air on Venus vaporized mercury?
Yes.
Which is counterintuitive because the air on Mercury is vaporized Venus.
Wait.
The Vikings named it that way to throw off people.
Yep.
I have not heard this, though, of it being vaporized mercury.
I may be making that up.
No, I think you're right.
That seems like a heavy gas to be on Venus. Yeah. But, well, I'm going to look
that
this up.
That would explain why everyone has, like, the crazy face masks.
Well, and the cloaks. Everybody knows Mercury can't touch cloaks. It's the atmosphere of Venus is made up mainly of carbon dioxide and thick clouds of sulfuric acid that completely covered the planet. Sounds like a hot vacation destination.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
96.5% carbon dioxide, 3.5% nitrogen.
Yeah.
I'm reading right now Out of This Silent Planet, which is like C.S. Lewis's
so good.
Narnia in Space. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because it was written like a long time before like even the space program was up and running. So just seeing like their like pseudo like, yeah, what you're saying sort of makes sense, but it's also completely crazy about like what the different planets would be like and like what space travel would be like and stuff like that is really, really entertaining.
That's what I love about sci-fi from around that era. Like, I think that Bradbury falls into that a lot as well, which is most of it is borderline mysticism.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm a little bit underwhelmed and disappointed that there are space wizards in Destiny, but they are just aliens under a different name. I want an actual space wizard.
Well, I think the other thing is...
it came from anywhere. I don't care where it comes from. I'm not going to discriminate.
I still maintain I miss hard sci-fi. I feel like to be sci-fi, you have to at least have like some scientific explanation.
What about Interstellar, dude? It's coming. A month and
like,
a week.
Like this one's like their spaceship is like a sphere where, you know, it's like a mini planet walking through. And they talk about like how disorienting it is that like your mind is so used to seeing straight walls, so it makes all the walls look straight, even though, you know, they're actually curved. So when you get to a doorway, it's like, you know, stepping off a balcony. It's like it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it's like there is kind of they like try to explain their crazy science.
Yeah, yeah. Like my ideal sci-fi writer is either Philip K. Dick or let's just go with Kilgore Trout from the Kurt Vonnegut novels. Like, I want to read all of his books. Yeah. Huh. Neat. Cool. Do you guys mind if I go on with mine? Ben, did you have anything else you were playing?
I had nothing that I played this week outside of board games, so I apologize.
That's fine. If it was not just a little bit past 11 here, I would ask you to talk about your board games, but I got some sleeping to do. Sorry,
that's
fans.
That's not within the scope of the podcast anyway.
I think it kind of is. I don't know. I'd like to hear about some board games to throw
so
in a
little
bit of.
So we won't talk about the board games, but we will argue about whether the board games are relevant.
Semantics are important.
Hey, you know,
can I talk about a board game that Ben will be playing in the future?
Sure.
For like 5 seconds. There's an XCOM board game coming out. It's cooperative, asynchronous, and amazing. So I think it comes out around December. I'm probably going to get it for Christmas. We'll see. But anyway, so look forward to that.
Is that
Christmas podcast?
It is. And I bought a little portable recorder too, actually. So yeah.
A GoPro?
No. I went on the wire cutter and I typed in, tell me what the best, what the best portable recorder is. And then I went and bought what it said. So.
Yeah, anyway, it should be a really good time.
Cool. So I'll go with mine. I only have one that I'm going to talk about because I have been playing it the most recently, and we are drawing to a close here. But Neverending Nightmares.
That's a nice one for bedtime, yeah.
I know, right? I've been playing it over the past, by past day or so, I mean the past day, and maybe a little bit the day before that. Okay, so this is the game that was funded on Kickstarter, made by the guy who did Retrograde. Dennis, you have spoken about this in the past, have you not?
Yeah, Retrograde. It's the weird rhythm game that kind of is Guitar Hero in both directions at once with time manipulation.
Yeah, it is. It is a rhythm-based reverse time side-scrolling shooter, right?
Yeah.
Notably, that game did not do very well at all. In fact, it tanked after years and years of development. And this developer, whose name I'm going to look up now while I'm saying this, it kind of tripped a couple of, let's say, mental illnesses, in him. And, he went into a very dark spot because, like, oh, here is a massive failure that I've had to experience, right? And that manifested itself as depression, that manifested itself as obsessive compulsive disorder. This is a very public, kind of thing that he's talked about in promoting this game because it informs the design of it. And so he put up this Kickstarter that just barely made its goal for a game called Neverending Nightmares, which is a kind of side-scrolling horror, you know, psychological horror game in the vein of, let's say, like Lone Survivor or Home, or, you know, like maybe picture a 2D like Amnesia or Outlast, right? Mm-hmm. You'll recognize this game, like, if you so the creator of this is Matt Gilgenbach, and his developers Infinitap Games. You will recognize this game by its visual style, which looks a little bit like Edward Gorey. Everything is black and white except for the blood, which is you know, animated. It's one of the few things in the game that is animated, aside from your character walking around and such. It's like very loose and sketchy line art as you're going through these like different environments.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And the game itself is kind of structured around, you know, it's weird because I would hesitate to call it a horror game, and it's more of a like objectionable and upsetting situation simulator.
Well, searching art for the game, one of the first things that come up is someone prying out their forearm bone, whatever that is, with a crowbar. So that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Or like one of them is like one of the little nightmare scenes is he reaches into his forearm and grabs a vein and opens up his forearm like it's a FedEx packet with the vein. Yeah, it's real. Man,
what?
Go ahead.
What is the thrust of it?
Like the thrust of it is, you know, like you wake up and there is one other person in the game. There's this woman, and as you are kind of going through these different scenarios, you know, each kind of path of this ends in some kind of horrible occurrence that makes you wake up. But instead, you wake up into a worse nightmare every time. So you know, like, and that's kind of the way at checkpoints. Like, you will occasionally, as you're going through the stages, you know, come across like a bedroom, and like, okay, this is going to be where I spawn later. When an eyeless monster, when he hears me at the wrong time, leaps on me and chews my throat open, I will wake back up there and come through it. So I hesitate to, you know, call it scary. I don't know, like, I don't feel feelings anymore, guys. So it's difficult for me, but there are a couple of jump scares, and there are some failed attempts at jump scares, and it attempts to be like foreboding in a way, and it's like, yes, I can see where objectively it, you know, it could be considered a horror game by somebody else's, you know, kind of appraisal, right? But the thing that really kind of like I think works about it, and I don't know if I'm entirely sure that it's a successful game on the whole, I think that It is boring in a way that, you know, you could say is intentional, but also makes it kind of like not that great to play, is because it does play into the obsessive compulsive side of it, right? So obsessive compulsion, despite what the media says, is not about washing your hands over and over again. That is one way that it can manifest itself, right? But instead, it's about routine, ritual, and intrusive thoughts. So as you're playing through this game, and especially like in the first chapter and then, you know, throughout the rest of it, a lot of it is the same environments over and over again. But as you're going through, the sound design and the visual design hint towards, okay, all this is effectively the same place. But each time you go through it after you die or wake up into a worse thing, is a slightly different version of what you've gone through. So it's a little bit like a House of Leaves things where they hit you with the same stuff over and over again until you're so kind of bored and inured to it that when a different painting, like, okay, this used to be a painting of a lady, now it's a painting of a skull, or like, oh, there wasn't blood there before, like as you go through, like it iterates so rapidly on the same or similar environments that's what it uses to kind of like hypnotize you and then shock you back out of it. And, you know, like, whereas a jump scare would be, you know, kind of goofy in a lot of games like Resident Evil or whatever, there are genuine situations where like you will happen across a meat grinder and then get a flash of your, you know, hand, like you feeding your hand through that hand cranked meat grinder kind of thing, and then it comes back like, oh, that was an intrusive thought, like that actually just kind of like popped in because of the stimulus around you and everything happening there. So it's funny because I wish that it would lean more into that kind of stuff and less into like, oh, here's an asylum with a pile of bodies. Or, like, here is a disturbing enemy that you have to, like, run and hide from. Like, it is obviously a very personal story on the part of this creator, right? And I wish that it was more about like that, because it's really hard to give a non-cliched or non-generic version of that, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that's powerful. I think that he might be couching it too much in, like, stuff that everybody considers to be horror tropes. Like, you know, like effective horror tropes. Like, okay, here's a young lady with no eyes, except they're just bleeding holes. Or, mm-hmm. you know, like, and it's the more subtle stuff that I think that ends up being a, you know, really effective horror insofar as it's not, you know, it's more insidious than that, you know, than just kind of like, oh, there's blood where there ought not be blood. And B, kind of like more accurate to teaching, you know, at the very least, you know, what I consider to be an accurate depiction of, you know, OCD or obsessive or intrusive thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be an excellent teaching tool, except I think that it kind of hamstrings itself by putting itself in this Victorian kind of, you know, kind of space, you know, where, like, okay, there's going to be a real spooky shower room in this asylum level, you know? Yeah. I don't know. It's a thing that I'm really happy exists, but I can't help when I play it poke holes in what is there, because I think that I went into it with a very high estimation of what the possibility was going to be based on what I read about it.
So you're looking forward to Never Ending Nightmares 2.
Yeah. The machine for pigs. So like the story is neat, and I like what they do with like what possibly is going on here. I got to the end of it earlier tonight, and then it kind of goes out to a Virtue's Last Reward-esque flowchart.
Oh, cool.
For like the way things happen. So it is really similar to Home, not the canceled PS3 virtual world environment, but Home, the horror game that's on like PC and iOS, in that it branches at places that you wouldn't expect it to, just by like, oh, I didn't realize this was a choice. I just did what felt natural. So like after I did that, I was like, well, I don't feel like walking through a bunch of the same environments over and over again. Like, I don't want to play this over again and just hope that I get it. So it lets you mm-hmm. actually pick the chapter where it branches again and then go for it. But I just looked at like, okay, when you get here, do this. When you get here, do that.
And does it tell you how it branches each time?
It tells you where it branches and like what possibly leads off of that. So I think there are possibly four different endings.
Okay.
And if it does what I think it's doing, I think that's going to be pretty neat. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know. It's weird because like for as quote lo-fi as the art direction on it is, not art direction, but as the graphics are, it's incredibly detailed and incredibly evocative, right? It looks unlike anything I've ever really seen before. So I almost want to recommend it just based on that, because this is something that's going to be like $5 in 2 months. I think that it's worth playing, but it just kind of seems to have missed some opportunities.
What are you playing it on?
It's on PC and Mac. So okay. I've got it fired up on my like living room PC, playing in a, you know, in like a dark room with the surround sound turned up.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's the optimal conditions. I don't know. Maybe my bar for being like scared or spooked is too high. I think that I'm approaching it with maybe like too intellectual. Like, you know, like just maybe I'm a little bit too cold and detached. And if I just kind of like went along for the ride, but yeah.
It definitely looks striking.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, it's so a game, David, I don't know if you played it, and if so, we'll talk about it another week, but Murasaki Baby came out recently, and that has, I won't call it a similar effect, but it's also kind of a pen-drawn aesthetic that has a lot of kind of off or disturbing elements about it. So mm-hmm. that's in more of a Tim Burton esque fashion than this is, mm-hmm. but it definitely is visually striking,
and that's something that I want, and that's something that I delight in, which is let's take high def and, you know, instead of applying that to photorealism, let's get something amazing in 2D in this. Like, I desperately want the high def, like ultra hand drawn version of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, right? Like I wish that was still a thing.
What's I want to say it's the Ubi Art Engine.
Yes, that is the thing.
Yeah, that is entirely designed around kind of animating hand-drawn objects and making that feel really smooth. So hopefully you'll get that.
There was a reference in the multiplayer section about Valiant Hearts, which is that World War I game that was done in the Ubi Art Engine.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So, like, if they think Rayman Origins, except they kind of built this around how do we make stuff
slapstick.
Yeah, how do we make something, you know, how do we make an engine that makes it as easy as possible to make something that looks amazing in motion?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like I'm of two minds about it. I really am. So I hesitate to say like go pick this up or not. But I think, like so many of these horror games, you will know if this is for you by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Are you of two minds about it because you have crowbarred your mind in half?
No, I have not crowbarred my mind in half. There are some upsetting visuals, and it's even more upsetting knowing that those images kind of come out of this own guy's battles with intrusive thoughts about self-harm. And I'm not sure if that's laudable. I think that, you know, like there's a message that you can take away from this, which is, if, you know, like learn more about this, if you get this, there is hope and there, you know, there are options, there are, you know, all kinds of resources for you, you know, if that's the case. But it feels personal in a way that might be just a little bit too uncomfortable or in a way that I'm not used to.
Would you say, even if it's not laudable, is it honest?
Yeah. So yeah, cool. I think that could be a virtue as well. And I don't, you know. Not to air my own dirty laundry or anything, it doesn't manifest in self-harm, but I come to this from a certain place of experience or, you know, having walked a little bit of that before. So I don't know if it's like maybe I identify with it too much. Again, not the self-harm thing, but just like the nature of what it's putting in front of you, right? Or the mechanics by which it operates.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Intriguing.
Yeah. But that just came out. It's really short. I think that if you are a person who does the dollars to hours ratio, you're probably going to find it wanting. My first playthrough of it, and I was recording all of it, so I was doing everything at full length, you know, so I could get good footage of it. That it took me about like 2 hours. Okay. So, and then there are four different endings you can get. So this is probably going to max out about like a 4 hour experience.
It's a double feature.
Yeah. Like, you know, you like so many things on Kickstarter or that came from Kickstarter, you're not so much paying for the thing itself, but you're voting for more stuff like this to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Cool.
Thanks, Boris.
Let's button it up. So that was level number 77. I'm fond of the number 77.
Why?
It's lucky.
Is it?
Yeah. Sevens are lucky.
Are they?
Twice as lucky as regular seven.
Yeah.
It's 7 times 11. 7-11.
Yeah.
7-11.
Go there and get some snacks. Yeah. And I like the
this
two.
This episode brought to you by 7-Eleven.
This episode is brought to you by snacks. Yeah. No, I like the two sevens. I think the three is too entropic for me. The two sevens feels a little bit more square. Although 4 sevens would probably
I like 3 sevens.
Oh. Well, we will agree to disagree about how many sevens are appropriate. So, oh, man. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I want to keep this admin section short. So like us on Facebook. It is at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You can also leave us a rating or review on iTunes. That is a thing that has not happened very much recently, so I'd like to see more of it. Although somebody updated their review to say that we're still going strong, and I appreciate that.
Yay!
And other than that, the Patreon, and if you're going to be in the Pacific Northwest, you can come out and meet us, at the very least, myself and Ben, and also Gary and some other people from the network at the Portland Retro Games Expo, which is happening here on October the 18th and 19th. Yep, and we're going to be doing a live show of Street Fighter 2. Did I miss anything, guys?
I'll plug. I don't know why I'm pushing this so hard, but I'm really enjoying streaming stuff on Twitch, and I can do that with everything I play now. So, twitch.tv/greenlaser73 for lots of Hearthstone and starting to get in some challenge runs of different things.
You picked up an Elgato, right?
Yeah, I kind of went with your recommendation. I've been very happy with it.
Nice. I'm very happy to hear that. Yeah. Ease of use is a big thing on that.
Yeah, the one surprise is that the USB out always needs to be plugged into something. So unless you always want to be running, like I've got the Elgato is always hooked up to my PS3, just the way my setup is. And that means that the USB out, even if I'm not recording, has to be plugged into like an iPhone charger for the picture to go through.
Yeah, because it's an encoder.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, that was easy for me to figure out and not that much of a problem, but there was nothing in the materials that referenced that. So,
yeah,
it's a, you know, not a big problem, but just a little heads up.
Yeah, it's, you know, all this technology is still kind of in its infancy. That is the one that, like, that product, this is not a paid spot or anything, but that is the one that I've consistently seen as, like, the here is the plug-and-play version of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, cool. So I've been Cole Ross. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter. That's 3 7s.
Ooh, that sounds lucky.
The gauntlet's been thrown.
I am and have been continued to be Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And until next time, can I introduce you to one of my two friends, either Richard Fartlick or Molly Nukes Klish? I'm sorry.
Mole nukes.
I'm just imagining like the Doctor Strangelove, except it's a mole like straddling a bomb about to destroy Moscow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Slim Diggins. So whereas raw spinach is delicious and tasty, raw kale will cause it'll kill your dick. It'll just straight up murder your dick.
I came back for it'll kill your dick.